The Bible reading tonight is from Luke chapter 11, verses 37 to 54, which can be found on page 1030 in the Black Pew Bibles if you'd like to follow along. When Jesus had finished speaking, a Pharisee invited him to eat with him. So he went in and reclined at the table. But the Pharisee, noticing that Jesus did not first wash before the meal, was surprised. Then the Lord said to him, "Now then, you Pharisees clean the outside of the cup and the dish, but inside you are full of greed and wickedness. You foolish people! Did not the one who made the outside make the inside also? But give what is inside the dish to the poor, and everything will be clean for you. Woe to you, Pharisees, because you give God a tenth of your mint, rue, and all other kinds of garden herbs, but you neglect justice and the love of God. You should have practiced the latter, without leaving the former undone. Woe to you, Pharisees, because you love the most important seats in the synagogues and greetings in the marketplaces. Woe to you, because you are like unmarked graves, which men walk over without knowing it." One of the experts in the law answered him, "Teacher, when you say these things, you insult us also." Jesus replied, "And you, experts in the law, woe to you, because you load people down with burdens they can hardly carry, and you yourselves will not lift one finger to help them. Woe to you, because you build tombs for the prophets, and it was your forefathers who killed them. So you testify that you approve of what your forefathers did. They killed the prophets, and you build their tombs. Because of this, God in his wisdom said, 'I will send the prophets and apostles, some of whom they will kill, and others they will persecute. Therefore, this generation will be held responsible for the blood of all of the prophets that has been shed since the beginning of the world, from the blood of Abel to the blood of Zechariah, who was killed between the altar and the sanctuary. Yes, I tell you, this generation will be held responsible for it all. Woe to you, experts in the law, because you have taken away the key to knowledge. You yourselves have not entered, and you have hindered those who were entering.' When Jesus left there, the Pharisees and the teachers of the law began to oppose him fiercely and to besiege him with questions, waiting to catch him in something he might say."
Good evening, everybody. Hello. My name is Eric. I'm one of the ministers here, and it's really nice to be at church with you all. It's a great way to finish the weekend together. And if I haven't met you before, I'd love to catch up with you over supper at the back after the church service. I might begin with tell you what happened. In February this year, I was able to attend in India the largest religious festival on earth. Jen's going to throw up a video of just this is the video of where we were, looking down over northern India in Allahabad, where the Ganges and Yamuna River meet. And over 3 months, 250 million people met at that spot. And so we went on a small day where 5 million people were. So we said, we'll go on a day where no one's there, we'll go when there's only 5 million people. So we went, and what the Hindus were doing in this rural area is they truly, truly believed that if they bathed in a certain spot where the rivers met, then their sins would be forgiven. So this is a video of what we saw down there. So people jumping into the Ganges and Yamuna River, which was disgusting, and bathing in the hope of attaining forgiveness of sins. That guy, the blue caps, the guy I was travelling with, and their guys from the Bible College were with. Okay, and so they went there, and what happens is that literally hundreds of thousands, millions of Hindus would follow their gurus down to the rivers. So the gurus would ride down in a chariot pulled by bullocks, and they'll be in a procession of hundreds of thousands of their followers would follow them right down. So each of these gurus, this guru on the right-hand side with his hand in the air, he was a guru who's famous for having his hand in the air for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And like my mate just said, look, it's tied up. That's kind of not cool. It's tied up there like that, so he can't lower his hand. And they have painting on their foreheads to show the sect that they're part of. And so these guys, the holiest of all the gurus, they're called sadhus. They live in the Himalayas, and they're supposed to renounce all material anything. So they walk around naked, they cover themselves in ash, and they have literally thousands of people following them. And they have tents where people would come in and say, "Teach me, Master. Teach me what I should know." One of the sadhus, the next slide please, Jen, was this guy here. For the man who renounced all material possessions and everything we possibly could do, he was sitting there naked with an audience of one of those ladies there, but he had expensive sunglasses. And if you look at his hand, he actually has a gold Rolex watch. And he's holding, we just missed him, he was actually talking on the phone when we tried to snap it. He was talking on a mobile phone. And so this is the man who renounced everything, actually had everything. And we didn't take the photo because the bouncers came out next, but behind all that kind of sitting on the floor stuff was a harem. A beautiful, expensive, luxurious place. So he wasn't actually living on the floor or anything like that, like an ascetic sadhu should have. He was a hypocrite. And all the people I was with a group of 15, and they said, "Hypocrite, hypocrite." You know, last week, I was a hypocrite. I'll tell you what happened. Every day, 3 days out of the five, I dropped my little boy off to Castle Hill Public School. And we live about 2 minutes walk from the school. And the way it normally works for me is that I'm in such a rush, when I hear the bell ring from my house, I throw Alex in the car, and we drive, not to the front gate and the kiss and drop like all the good parents do. I drive him to the back gate and shove him out the back door. And it's called the dump and run. There are about five other families that do it. And we all know each other. We go, we go like that all the way through. And it's kind of cool subculture of the dump and run families. And this day, it was a dump and run. Normally, I actually wind the window down. I throw his bag out the window. I say, "Chase, get it. Run for your life. You're late." And this time, I reached around for his bag and his hat and it wasn't there. I went, "Oh, Alex, get back in the car because I'm not going to park the car and walk in and give you a hat and your bag later. You're coming back and you're going to be late." So we drove back home. I get his bag and I do the quick sprint. It's literally one block from our house. Sprint around, wheel to a stop, and my lunch spewed out all over the floor in the front of the car, and I screamed out a very colourful metaphor. And for all those people who haven't done grammar at school, which is most of you, it's a word that sounds like truck. And Alex went, "What? Dad said that?" Normally, we've actually washed his mouth out with soap before when he said that. And Alex went, "What's going to happen now?" And I thought, I am the biggest hypocrite in the whole wide world. How could Alex ever listen to me ever again when I say, "Alex, don't speak like that. Don't talk to your mum like that. Don't ever say that, because actually, Dad, you always say that stuff." No, actually, I heard you say it, and that's once is enough. You're a hypocrite, Dad. I wonder if you've ever been in that same situation where you've been a hypocrite, where you've held someone or people to a standard that you do not hold yourself. Or you've told someone to do something or be somewhere, but you did not do it yourself. That is a hypocrite. And the nature of hypocrisy is being two-faced, it's being insincere, it's being pretentious, it's being duplicitous, it's having double standards. And that's what we're talking about tonight, the issue of hypocrisy. Because this week we start a new series over the next 3 weeks, or this week and the next 3 weeks, we're starting a new series about apologetics. And tonight we're looking at the issue of hypocrisy. And when I say apologetics is about defending the Christian faith. When someone intentionally or out of curiosity questions something about Christianity, well, when we respond, that is engaging in apologetics. And a key passage, as what Emma prayed tonight, a key passage to help us understand why we do apologetics is 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15. "In your heart set apart Christ as Lord, Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. So this series is about getting a better answer. A better one than one that just avoids the issue or dismisses the issue or makes the issue worse. And we want better answers because better responses ultimately help us have more opportunities to talk about Jesus. So the plan for tonight is this. Firstly, is to look at the key apologetic issue, which is looking at hypocrisy. What would you say when someone says the church is full of hypocrites? That's the issue we're looking at tonight. The second thing we're doing is hearing a 30-second response that will just help get the ball rolling. And then thirdly, we're going to take a deeper look at the issue from Luke's gospel because we want and we believe, I believe, that it is deeply relevant to every one of us, whether we're Christian or not, the issue of hypocrisy. So let's get started. We all know that there's a real problem of hypocrisy amongst Christians. Think of those clergy who get charged with sexually abusing children. Think of those we know who call themselves Christians, but they leave their spouse and family to run off with someone else. Think of those we know who have been treated unjustly by people who call themselves Christians at uni or at work. Think of those who come to church and do all the churchy kind of religious things, but on Saturday night and throughout the week, they're worse than the worst, morally worst person you can think of. The non-Christian world and all of our unchurched friends, they see these obvious acts of hypocrisy. And it's not that they don't see hypocrisy outside of the church, rather they see it inside the church, which is supposed to be following the example of Jesus Christ. So in a recent survey of Australians, here is a list of the three top issues that repelled Australians from Christianity. Here are the three issues from your left to right. You've got, so the dark blue is massive negative influence and the light blue is significant negative influence. Well, church abuse repels the average Australian, repels 76% of average Australians. Hypocrisy in the church repels 68%. Judgmentalism of Christians repels 69% of Australians. So we're talking about a big issue in today's society. How would you respond when someone says the church is full of hypocrites? Now, how about we think through a few responses? But before I get there, we have to recognize that all questions come from different contexts. They may well have been asked because the person who asks is trying to cause trouble or make you stumble. Or maybe they ask because they themselves are a victim of hypocrisy in the church. Or maybe they're just curious or observant. So tonight, I'm not going to provide you with a magic bullet answer, but remember that when we do give answers, we need to be kind and generous and gracious and sensitive. So with that in mind, how might we respond when someone says the church is full of hypocrites? Well, common answer number one is this one. Well, not all Christians are like that. I'm not. In fact, the person you're talking about, they're probably not even Christian. That's common answer number one. And the way I think of that is that that's a deflection. It deflects the whole issue and it kind of pretends that you didn't ask it and hopes you don't ask it again. Common response number two is, well, maybe we don't know all the circumstances. So possibly the situation you're talking about is not so hypocritical if you knew all the circumstances. Now I call this the politician's kind of response because you often see this on the news when the church gets done for something they shouldn't have been done and it looks like and it sounds like a politician or hypocrite covering for other hypocrites. That's what it looks like and sounds like. Common response number three is, yes, the church is full of hypocrites, but I don't have to answer for them. I have to answer for God on Judgment Day for my sins, not theirs. And I call this the theologically correct but annoying answer. Because it kind of is right. Yeah. You answer for your own sins, but it doesn't actually answer the heart of the question at all. It doesn't talk about hypocrisy. It doesn't actually answer their question or satisfy their desire to know the answer at all. Well, the fourth common answer I got, and this is often what I call the up yours dismissive response. It says, when they're asked, when someone says the church is full of hypocrites, they say, there's always room for one more. Well, it's the up yours, get lost response. I want to say that there's no one correct response, by the way, but we want to get our answers to at least point to Jesus. So it's worth thinking through an adequate response so that we don't get tongue-tied or make the issue worse when opportunities to answer these questions arise. So let me share with you a tip that comes from one of the greats in the Australian church, John Dixon. He says this about answering apologetic questions. He says the way to do it is to take the question and answer it briefly by recounting something relevant that Jesus said or did. Interesting. So to answer the statement, what would you say when someone says the church is full of hypocrites? Well, here's a suggested response that would go according to what John Dixon would say. He would say, there's no doubt that there are many examples of Christians and the church being hypocrites. And you're right to be concerned and even angry about it. But it's really interesting because Jesus himself was a really strong critic of the religious hypocrites of his day. In fact, on one occasion, he was eating a meal in the home of a religious leader, and this guy picked up that Jesus didn't follow all the religious rules like washing. The reality is that Jesus doesn't care much for outward appearances. And throughout all of Jesus' life, he clearly stood to overturn all those religiously hypocritical things. Actually, when you read what Jesus said and what he did, he was really angry at how the religious hypocrites stopped people from truly knowing God. Now, that's a 30-second answer. It's a bit fuller than what those other ones were. But do you kind of get the feel of what we're trying to do here? To answer apologetic questions well, we ought not to be dismissive. We ought not avoid the issue. We have to at least get to humbly try to answer the heart of the question. But at the same time, isn't it great that we get to talk about Jesus? So far, we've looked at hypocrisy, how it turns people away from following Jesus. That was the first thing. We just briefly looked at it on the screen. There's a 30-second response that kind of will help you get an idea of how we can learn to answer well. Now, the third thing I want to do tonight was actually spend a few moments looking closely about what Jesus says about hypocrisy in Luke chapter 11. So if you could open up to page 1030, that'd be really helpful. Luke chapter 11, verse 37 onwards. When Jesus had finished speaking, a Pharisee invited him to eat with him. So he went in and reclined at the table. But the Pharisee, noticing that Jesus did not first wash before the meal, was surprised. Then the Lord said to him, "Now then, you Pharisees, clean the outside of the cup and dish, but inside you're full of greed and wickedness. You foolish people, did not the one who made the outside make the inside also? But give what is inside the dish to the poor, and everything will be clean for you." Now, Jesus launches into the six woes against the hypocrisy of the religious leaders. Now, these religious leaders were on one side the Pharisees, and then the other guys who are they're often called the scribes, but in this passage they're called the experts in the law. And to be completely honest, this is one of those examples where Jesus is just brutal. And there's no doubt that Jesus is very critical of hypocrites. And Jesus points out that the problem is that hypocrites are all two-faced. What they're like on the outside is not what they are inside. What the Pharisees cared about was that it looked clean, that it looked right on the outside. And they were the ones who were critical of Jesus for not following those outside rules like washing. But Jesus was much more worried about the state of the person inside. Their character, their passion, their true concerns, their love, what drives them to do what they do. And when I think carefully about Jesus' words here about hypocrisy and the situation in Luke 11, it's actually really disconcerting. Let me explain why. The Pharisees and the teachers of the law, they are the ones who are often painted as the bad guys. But in reality here, they were the ones who were perfect on the outside. They're the upright ones. They're the law-abiding citizens. They're the ones who couldn't be faulted when it came to the law. And it's extremely hard to be that perfect, dotting every I, fulfilling every rule. But they did it. Somehow they did it. Look in verse 42, when it came to tithing, that is giving back to God, they even counted their garden herbs. These guys were meticulous in being perfect and being perfect on every religious front. But Jesus wasn't impressed. He points to their faults, and all their faults are actually on the inside. So take a look at those six woes. That's the way the passage is structured when you look at it. There are six woes, three to the Pharisees, three to the experts in the law, and four, five, and six flow out from three. That's the structure. So this gives us a good idea of the hypocrisies that Jesus actually hated. So look at woe number one in verse 42. You give a tenth of your mint and rue and all kinds of garden herbs, but you neglect justice and the love of God. In other words, the Pharisees were just paying lip service. They were meticulous down to the very, very finest detail about every single little law. But they simply disregarded anything to do with justice for others or love of God. To one end, they made sure that they were extremely careful to do even more than they ever needed for the outside things. But they did nothing at all for the things of the inside. I wonder if we care more about the things of the outside. Do we care more about traditions or about making our church feel and look right? Do we care more about how professional things are here? The lighting, the sound, the music, the style, the sermon, the building, the image we have, the marketing. Do we care more from those outside things than we do about hearing and obeying the word of God? Than we do about caring for one another in here? Than we do about building one another up as the body of Christ? Do we sing with gusto at church at how much we love God, how much we lay everything down before God, how much we're worshiping God, but we forget it as soon as we sing the last song? Do we give money to church and to mission, but really don't feel anything for the poor or the needy or the outcast? Or even those who will go to hell without Jesus? Do we come to church week in and week out, but the reality is that our hearts are far, far from God, paying lip service to God? Ask yourself, am I better than the Pharisees? Woe number two, look at verse 43. You love the most common, the most important seats in these synagogues and greetings in the marketplace. Now, Jesus is not going out of his way to put down extroverts here. He's not saying the Pharisees were bad for being the center of attention. The problem was that Jesus is attacking them because the Pharisees cared about self-importance and wanting to be honored by people rather than God. What about us? Do we do things to seek praise from people? Do we do things to gain power and influence? Do we do things just to become popular? For the leaders of anyone here, whether at church or work, how do we treat those who are under our care? Do we serve humbly in our leadership, as Jesus did? Or do we lord power over others? You've got to ask yourself, am I at all better than the Pharisees? Woe number three. You're like unmarked graves which men walk over without knowing it. And the unfortunate thing here is that hypocrisy is that it affects other people. In Jesus' time, walking over a grave made them spiritually defiled. It made them religiously unclean. Jesus is saying that the hypocrisy of the Pharisees is like an unmarked grave. If others walk according to the Pharisees' way, then they would be defiled even without knowing it. If we're concerned about outward performance over inward purity, then we will infect other people. If we're concerned about outward appearance over inward purity, then we will corrupt other people who follow us. So watch out. And this verse, this third woe, relates to the next three woes from verse 46 onwards. Woe four is, and you experts in the law, woe to you, because you load people down with burdens they can hardly carry, and you yourselves will not lift one finger to help them. Woe number five, woe to you, because you build tombs for the prophets, and it was your forefathers who killed them. So you testify that you approve of what your forefathers did. They killed the prophets, and you build their tombs. And woe six in verse 52, woe to you, experts in the law, because you've taken away the key of knowledge. You yourselves have not entered and have hindered those who were entering. So as in woe number three, hypocrisy doesn't just affect the one who practices it. Because hypocrisy is just like bad teaching. It's just like false teaching. It's just like a cancer or gangrene or a contagious virus. It spreads. And it's particularly dangerous when religion grabs hold of it. The experts of the law, they were again the outwardly very astute people in Jesus' day. They were revered teachers who knew God's commandments and Old Testament. They knew the rabbinic laws back to front. They were teachers and interpreters of the very words of God. But Jesus saw hypocrisy written all over the religious rules that these experts imposed on their people. These rules did not help people know God better. Instead, they became a burden. Outwardly, they showed the respect to the prophets by building them tombs, but in fact, the experts, like their forefathers, didn't listen to the prophets and were even responsible for their deaths. And what's worse, the most devastating thing is that the hypocrisy of the religious leaders not only prevents them from being accepted by God, it hinders others from knowing God too. And as someone who teaches at this church regularly, I have to be so careful about what I teach. And I was thinking about this last week, whether our church, whether we as leaders participate in these religious leaders' hypocrisy. Do we have rules that we teach here that are man-made? Human rules of what we should do and what we shouldn't do. These man-made, burdensome, hypocritical rules always have the lofty ambition of helping us be more godly or preventing us from causing other people to stumble. But we have to ask ourselves, do we require things of people that just become outward performance but fail to deal with the real problem in our hearts? Now, this is a tough word for anyone who teaches anyone. This is a tough word for anyone who teaches youth, anyone who teaches children. This is a tough word for all mothers and fathers. This is a tough word for all people in positions of power or authority, no matter what shape or form you take it in. Above all, this is a really tough word for us ministers. For us who handle the word of God, who pastor people, who lead people in ways of righteousness. It's a tough word for anyone who leads a small group, I reckon that religious hypocrisy is rampant today, just as it was in Jesus' day. And there's no doubt that Jesus is as critical of it now as he was when he was on the earth 2,000 years ago. The thing that is so disconcerting is that even if you got an A+ in doing all the religious rules, that isn't even enough. Jesus looks into the very heart of all of us. And he saw then, and he sees now, darkness, dirt, and moral filth. What we saw in our passage this evening is that we, like the religious leaders, can hide the inside of us from everyone else. We can look pious, we can look pure, we can get lots of pats on our back for our outward performances, but that's not good enough for God. He sees our inside. He sees our greed and wickedness and unloving motives and cruelty and ugliness and self-centeredness. It's so uncomfortable to think that we can't hide that from God. So when we think of the issue of hypocrisy, I think there's no escape for any of us, whether we've chosen to follow Jesus or not. All our hearts are disgusting. And if we're honest, we'll admit it. We differ in how well we can hide it from others. We differ in the kinds of sins we participate in. But God knows, and God will be the judge. A little while ago, two robbers held up a bank, and for some really bizarre reason, only one of those robbers wore a balaclava. So you can imagine, 10 minutes later, they were captured. Can you imagine that man who didn't wear a mask standing before the judge and saying, "Honor, Your Honor, I admit I robbed that bank. I admit I did it, but at least I went there without any pretense. I went there without any mask. I wasn't a hypocrite. Everybody saw who I was." Now, that doesn't cut it with the judge. So if you want to play the game of the Pharisee, you can play from any position on the board, but you'll lose because God sees all and God will judge all, even the things that none of us can see in your hearts. In 1 Samuel chapter 16, the Lord does not look at the things man looks at. Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. The difference is that for us Christians, is that we are self-acknowledged hypocrites. Today's passage reminds us of this fact. And now the aim for tonight's talk is not to guilt us into action. That's what burdensome, hypocritical rules do. The aim tonight is not to guilt us into action, but rather to point us and drive us into the arms of our gracious God. Christianity is not a religion of rules. Rather, Jesus came to lift the burden of those religious rules. He gives us freedom to access God. He gives us true knowledge of Him. And even those hypocrites that made Jesus white-hot angry, He died for every single one of us. So, turn to Jesus and say sorry. Trust that He has died for us and given His Spirit to renew our hearts. So what would you say if someone says that the church is full of hypocrites? There's no doubt there are many examples of Christians and the church being hypocrites. And you're right to be concerned and even angry about it. And it's really interesting because Jesus himself was a strong critic of the religious hypocrisy of his day. In fact, on one occasion, he was meeting in a house of a religious leader, having a meal. And this guy picked up that Jesus didn't follow all the religious rules like washing. And the reality is that Jesus doesn't care much for the outward appearances. And throughout Jesus' life, he clearly stood to overturn all those religiously hypocritical things. Actually, when you read about Jesus and see what he said and did, he was really angry about how those religious hypocrites stopped people from knowing God. And even though Jesus couldn't stand those hypocrites, people like me, people like you, he actually came to die for us and save us from our sins and hypocrisy and transform us into his unhypocritical image. Do you know much about this Jesus?